This week, we examine a Christian Scottish Rite member's research into the three great religions of China, Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism. Are there inherent Masonic virtues? We'll hear from Greg Knott as he explains the reasons for striving to greatness, although we may never attain it, and we'll hear about his new podcast. We'll also get a sneak peek at the all-new Fraternal Review magazine with a focus on dissonance and harmony within Freemasonry. What happens when Greg Kaminsky finds a copy of Paul Foster Case's Rosicrucian teachings in the Grand Lodge office? Stay with us to find out this and more.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, welcome back. This is episode number 430. Thanks for joining us. As I mentioned in the promo just before the program began, we've got three great subjects coming up this week, and we'll get right into those right after we pay the bills. All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together, and I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program, and in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. So before we get into this week's first piece, I alluded to the fact that we've got this piece by Greg Knott, who is a longtime contributor to the Midnight Freemasons blog, but more than that, he is now a full-blown podcaster. That's right, he started a brand new show called Meet, Act, and Part. Episode 1 is out now, and you can find it on Podomatic. The hosts for the show are Greg Knott, Darren Lehners, and Bill Hosler. And they introduced themselves this week, and they discussed the topic of Masonic education. Now, what's fantastic is they're really talking about what's working for them and their impact that they've been able to see through the Midnight Freemasons, through podcasting, through their various channels that they're into. I highly recommend the podcast. You can check them out again. It's at podomatic.com, and you can check them out. But I think I've shared it on Facebook as well. It's only about 30 minutes. It's got some great traction, so they're just getting started. So this first piece is by our brother, Greg Knott, and it's his first piece for 2020. So it goes a little something like this. The Rough and Perfect Ashlar by senior Midnight Freemason contributor, worshipful brother Gregory J. Knott. At our last meeting of Homer Lodge number 199, fellow Midnight Freemason Darren Lainers led a fantastic discussion on the topic of the Rough and Perfect Ashlar. That night, the attendees ranged in age from 20 to 80. As I listened to my fellow Lodge brothers talk about this topic, I was very impressed with the insight that each of them brought to the discussion. As Freemasons, we venture onward toward a goal of perfection that is not achievable. Yet, as one of the reflection questions from the discussion asked, if we cannot obtain perfection, then why would we strive for it? The discussion regarding this question focused around the need for continued individual growth, working toward constant self-improvement, or one risks becoming stagnant in life. Several brothers spoke about the spiritual growth that is important along life's journey. Self-improvement as a goal provides the motivation for continued learning, challenging oneself to try new experiences, and looking inward to a deeper understanding of oneself. Metaphorically, the Rough Ashlar represents the imperfect individual. It represents you, the Freemason, but as a Freemason, you have been given the tools towards chipping away at the Rough Ashlar in pursuit of the Perfect Ashlar. In order to do your work as the Freemason, you must use these tools, or you risk not improving your Ashlar. So, I challenge you to pick up your working tools and begin chipping away towards your Perfect Ashlar. Your journey in life will be so much more rewarding. Greg Knott, Worshipful Master, Ogden Lodge, number 754, Illinois, and a past master of St. Joseph Lodge, 970, and a plural member of Homer Lodge 199 and Naval Lodge number 4 in Washington, D.C. Now, it's a short piece that Greg offers here, but what he said is so much. So many times I'm in Lodge and it will never cease to amaze me the number of brothers who have never taken the time to really think about what our ritual is alluding to. And of course, what we are alluding to, or what we're saying, is that the temple and what it's made of is you and the mind and the spirit. And the tools should remind you to, we literally say it, break off the rough and superfluous parts of the stone. But what that alludes to, or what that means, is that we should be divesting ourselves of bad habits and vices, or to take control of those things, get rid of the parts of us that we don't like, and reform us into a more perfect individual. And that's what this is about. When we strive for it, even though it may be unattainable, perhaps striving for the idea of apotheosis. So while some of you listening heard this and thought, yes, I know this already, but what are we doing to put it into practice? I know at least at some point during my weekly meditations, I meditate daily, but at some point during the week, I always have at least one meditation where I touch on a Masonic element and I think about a perfect stone. And I visualize myself and my bad habits as the jagged pieces. And I visualize myself taking those off. And the hope is that through this exercise will beget a physical, real world casting away of these elements that I don't like about myself, these elements that are not good. So, food for thought. All right, now before we move on to the next piece, I just want to remind everybody, I know I told you all in the first section of how to support the show, but I'll just remind you also that there is a bookstore now on wcypodcast.com. you can click on there, and if you buy the books through our website, through our page there, click through our links, and Amazon sends a couple pennies our way. So if you're thinking about buying a few books, or you want to take a look at some of the books that I've personally recommended, they may not be books that were from the show, but I do have some personal recommendations on there as well. Just click through, do us a favor and do that. All right, so our second paper for this week is actually a two-part paper, and it comes from the New Age magazine, 1950. You know, there were a lot of these great magazines that were in publication in the early part of the 20th century, and for the large part have gone away. And this is no surprise due to the ever-increasing cost of print. However, I guess I would like to ask all of our listeners if this would be something that you would be interested in, republishing old articles like these magazines, perhaps even in just a format that you can download from Scribe or something like that. If it's something you'd be interested in, shoot me a message. Let me know. Put it up on Facebook or tag us on YouTube or something, and let us know what you would be interested in. And maybe, just maybe, we can put together something kind of cool. You know, illustrious Brother Harrison talked about the great Ray V. Denslow, who put together something called the Masonic World, which is this publication where he compiled everything. That could be really cool to do something similar again. But maybe it doesn't need to be done. Maybe we have the internet and that's good enough. But in any case, let's get started with this second piece, China's Three Great Religions and Their Teachers, Part 1 by Frank H. Marvin, 32nd Degree, The New Age, June 1950. The three great religions of China are Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism, and the three teachers of these were Buddha, Confucius, and Lao Tse. These three teachers lived close to the same time. Buddha, whose real name was Siddhartha Gautama, was born in India sometime between 560 and 480 BCE. Confucius was born in China about 550 BCE, and Lao Tse was born in the same country about 604 BCE. Confucius and the old philosopher Lao Tse were contemporaries for about 28 years and apparently met personally several times. It is reported that Confucius could not understand the teachings of his older Chinese philosopher and was very frank in saying so, using the following words, quote, "I know how birds fly, how fishes swim, how animals run. The bird may be shot, the fish hooked, and the bee snared, but there is the dragon. I cannot tell how he mounts in the air and soars to heaven. Today I have seen the dragon," meaning Lao Tse. End quote. It is true that the teachings of Buddha did not spread over China from India until about 60 CE, but it is a very significant fact that the spans of the life of Buddha, Confucius, and Lao Tse were something like only 50 years apart, and that the teachings of each of these three great men have persisted for something like the square of 50 years, or a total of 2,500 years, and have influenced the lives of countless millions of people during that time. At this juncture, the devoted Scottish Rite Mason, it seems appropriate to me to mention that our great leader, Albert Pike, has said in his Morals and Dogma, page 227, about Buddha and Confucius. According to him, Buddha was the quote-unquote first Masonic legislator whose memory is preserved to us by history, and he, quote, "called to the priesthood all men, without distinction of caste, who felt themselves inspired by God to instruct men," end quote. He declared, on pages 277 and 278, that this Buddhist priesthood recognized the existence of a single uncreated God in whose bosom everything grows, is developed and transformed, and the worship of this God reposed upon the obedience of all the beings he created. According to Albert Pike, page 616, Confucius forbade making images or representations of the deity. He attached no idea of personality to him, but considered him as a power or principle pervading all nature. The doctrine of Confucius, according to Pike, page 169, was stated in the Chinese Ethics as being, quote-unquote, "simple and easy to understand, consisting solely in being upright of heart and loving our neighbor as we love ourselves." The theory of the four sublime virtues, verities, or truths, lies at the foundation of Buddhism. They are one, that pain is inseparable from existence, inasmuch as existence brings old age, sickness, and death. Two, that pain is the offspring of desire, and of faults that desire has made us commit in previous states of existence, or in the present state of existence. This verity comprehends the belief in the transmigration of souls, that is, that a soul migrates from one body to another in a whirlpool of rebirths. 3. That existence, and therefore the accompanying pain from which it is inseparable, can only cease through nirvana, which is the arrival of the soul at the state of blissful oblivion, a condition of eternally unconscious repose, or the complete annihilation of the thinking principle, or a complete mental blowout. 4. That in order to attain nirvana, our desires and passions must be suppressed. Buddhism differs from Christianity in that the Christian is taught that he alone owns his own soul, that his soul is immortal, and the trials and tribulations of the soul after death are affected by the conduct of the individual during human existence. The Buddhist conception of the soul is predicated on gratitude to the possessors of the same soul in the past for their struggles from birth to death, respectively, in trying to suppress and overcome passions which have caused pain, and his aim to serve the successive possessors of the same soul by himself struggling to overcome passions. From the study which I have made, it appears that Buddhism is like Protestantism, in that they both save the soul by teaching moral precepts, in contrast to the Roman Catholic Church, which places the essence of religion on formal and devout sacrificial and sacramental services, the daily sacrifice of the Mass being a very vital feature of the latter religion. In both Protestantism and Buddhism, the sermons are the main instruments by which souls are saved, whereas the Church of Rome places more emphasis on the Mass than on the sermon. In Romanism, the priesthood is a very powerful factor, whereas in both Buddhism and Protestantism, the members of the church who do not belong to the priesthood are given much greater importance. It is true, however, that externally there is a resemblance of the Buddhist rites and ceremonies to those of the Roman Catholic Church, in that they both have the monastery, the celibacy or unmarried status of the priests, the similarity in the dress and caps of the priests, the incense, the bells, the rosary of beads, the lighted candles at the altar, the same intonations and services, the same idea of purgatory, the praying in the unknown tongue, and the offerings to departed spirits in the temple. Buddhism, like Protestantism, is a revolt of the rights of nature against the domination of the spirit, of humanity against caste, of individual freedom against the domination of a clergic order, and of salvation by faith against salvation by sacraments. It may be, however, that with Buddhism, this revolt has gone too far, for in asserting the rights of nature against the domination of the spirit, this religion has lost God. There is in it neither creation nor creator. Its tract says, "The rising of the world is a natural cause. Its rising and perishing are by nature itself." The Buddhist knows only this world and is not interested in the eternal world, his chief aim being to escape from the vicissitudes of time into the absolute rest of nirvana, as above mentioned. To be continued. Between these two papers, there's probably a few things we should talk about. Number one, it seems that his only source here is morals and dogma, so I would not call this responsible work. Anybody who reads or studies comparative religions already has had a problem with some of the statements that the writer has asserted. Specifically, the lost God of Buddhism. The nature is the prime mover, the creator itself. This is not something totally different. It may seem in the 1950s that this was very different and perhaps even unacceptable for maybe the Masonic fraternity, but today we have Buddhists, we have Wiccans, we have Hindus, First Nations, all kinds of people within Freemasonry today that have a concept of God that is wholly different. But when we say the words, who best can work and best agree, what are we agreeing on? Well, in regular Freemasonry, the one core thing that we all agree on is this idea of a fatherhood of God under the brotherhood of man, and that God is essentially an infinite number of ideas according to the conscious dictates of the perceiver. In any case, let us continue in part two. Now, there was only the 30 days between the two articles. So, again, this is China's Three Great Religions and Their Teachers, part two, by the same author, Frank H. Marvin, 32nd degree, in the New Age magazine, this time in July. So just 1 month later, same year. Here we go. The teachings of Confucius has had an immense influence on China for 2,500 years. Though he can hardly be said to have founded either a religion or a philosophy, his doctrines were developed to practical morality and to the duties of man in relation to his fellow men, based upon his own wisdom and that derived by him from the teachings of antiquity. He taught the great principles of morality, which were founded on family affection and duty, teaching kings that they were to treat their subjects as children, and that their subjects were to treat their kings as parents. He was the exponent of the doctrine of reverence, reverence for God, for parents, for the past and its traditions and accomplishments, and above all, he taught the golden rule that one should not do to others what he does not wish to be done unto him. Examples of his moral maxims which have greatly influenced the Chinese people are the following. These are all quotes. A. To conduct the government of a state, there must be religious attention to business and good faith, economy of expenditures, and love of the people. It would seem that if every executive and legislator of our federal and state government would constantly keep this motto before them and faithfully strive to follow the same, it would be greatly conducive to the happiness and welfare of our own people. B. To see what is right and do it is want of courage. C. When you have faults, do not fear to abandon them. D. Always and in everything, let there be reverence. E. What I do not wish others to do to me, that also I wish not to do to them. F. Filial piety is the root of virtue. It commences with the service of parents. It proceeds to the service of the ruler. It is completed by the establishment of character. G. Worship as though the deity were present. H. Grieve not that men know not you. Grieve that you know not men. Confucius was very careful to avoid certain subjects, such as the capacities and faculties of dead spirits, and he was very adroit and ingenious in sidestepping the answers to questions in relation thereto. As an example, when asked about death, he answered, quote, "While you do not know life, how can you know about death?" End quote. When he was asked whether the dead had knowledge of the service rendered to them by the living, he replied, "If I were to say the dead have such knowledge, filial sons and dutiful grandsons would injure their substance in paying the last offices to the departed. And if I were to say that the dead have no such knowledge, I am afraid that unfilial sons would leave their parents unburied." The system of Confucius differs from Christianity in that the latter has greater completeness. Jesus fulfills the Confucian reference for the past by adding hope for the future, by adding faith in God as well as faith in man, and giving to his followers a hope of immortal life prompted by a sense of the fatherly presence of God. In short, both Confucianism and Christianity inculcate and instill in their teachings the brotherhood of man, one of the two great principles of Masonry. But it is really Christianity and not Confucianism which also advocates the other great principle of Masonry, to wit, the fatherhood of God. As a philosophy, Taoism meant the revolution of the heavens about the earth, which produced the phenomena on earth. Tao stood for the creative force, or cosmic energy. This philosophy dealt with the age-long problem of being and becoming. Lao Tse appears to have taught the philosophy of the good enough. This thought is, quote, "Why forever strive after the best, which theoretically is never obtainable? Just accept the good enough and be contented and happy." End quote. Taoism teaches simplicity, frugality, and the love of the soil, the good earth. Lao Tse did not advocate the laborious educational system of Confucius, He believed in innocence and resignment and preferred a simple culture to wealth. The Taoists have generally been pacifists to a certain degree and favored small political units and have been against centralized politics and against all forms of slavery and legal dictation. The whole teaching of Lao Tse has been considered by many to be vague and unsatisfactory, but he made great advance over the teachers who had preceded him by laying down the doctrine that ultimately good would gain the victory over evil, and by insisting that good should be returned for evil as the sure way to overcome it. As a demonstration of these teachings, Taoism has the following rules. 1. To those who are good to me, I am good, and to those who are not good to me, I am also good. Thus, all get to be good. 2. To those who are sincere with me, I am sincere, and to those who are not sincere, I am also sincere. Thus, all get to be sincere. 3. Recompense injury with kindness. 4. They rejoice not if men revere them. They are not angered if men insult them. But only those are capable of this who have passed into the eternal harmony of God. In conclusion, it may well be said that the striving for nirvana in Buddhism, through each successive possessor of the same soul leading a clean, wholesome life to overcome the faults prompted by desire, the golden rule of Confucianism, do not do to others what you would not like others to do to you, and the doctrine of Taoism of returning good for evil, demonstrate that these three great religions of China are good, moral ones, even though they may not, in our way of thinking, be as complete as our Christian religion, which embraces the principle of the fatherhood of God as well as the principle of brotherhood of man. So that is the end of this piece, and what I found interesting was it is really what I envision is the author, who is a stout Christian who may be trying to explain these concepts to his Christian brothers that may be his base wherever he is from. Specifically, let's be honest, for the most part, the United States is majority Christian, and for a long time, the willful ignorance of men abounded in relation to a great many things, including religions. This is evident today when certain people espouse that certain religions are devil worship, or how many times has, I don't know, maybe you've never experienced this, but an anti-Mason, right? Somebody who thinks that we're devil worshippers just by the simple fact that they don't understand what we're talking about, or they just read the Taxil hoax stuff and believe it. So it's just interesting. I don't fault the writer in any sense of the word. I think he's speaking from his particular point of view and to a certain set of brothers. And he made some very interesting points. All right, now we're going to move on to next segment here. But just before we get to what I'm really excited to talk about, let me just go ahead and say that it was an absolute pleasure to attend Lodge Vitruvian 767. My thanks goes out to all of the brothers there. I was just there on the 28th, and I have to thank them immensely. Coming up on February 21st, I will be at Landmark Lodge number 422, which is in Plainfield, Illinois, and I will be presenting, I believe, the same night as my friend and brother, Bull Garlington. And don't come to see me. I said it last week. Come to see Bull. He's a fantastic speaker, really funny guy, and super charismatic. After that, on just the next day, actually, is Saturday, I will be at Libertyville Lodge number 492, and I'll be talking about the Ark and Freemasonry. I would love for you to come out. It is a free event. However, they do ask that you register. So if you go to wcypodcast.com, click on the presentation schedule, and you'll see that there's a link. You can click it, and you can let the organizers know that you'll be going. Many thanks to those who go over there and take care of that. And lastly, I don't want to get too far in the future, but March 7th, the Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium. It will be at Hillsborough Lodge, number 25, FNAM, in Tampa, Florida. And you will need to buy some tickets. There's a link there that'll take you there to get it. The tickets for the event is $35. There is an evening fellowship event as well. That's $15. What is going to be happening there? So it is going to be the inaugural Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium 2020. They have some prominent speakers there. I can tell you speakers who will be present are myself, as well as maybe some other guys from the Masonic Roundtable. So it'll be a good time. And I think a couple other guys will also be there. So it's going to go all day long, and it'll be a really good time to go. And I've never been to Florida to present, so that'll be a first for me. I'm very excited. All right. Now we're going to get to the point in this program where I get to read this really great paper. And this, again, comes from the Southern California Research Lodge Fraternal Review, February 2020 issue, Dissonance and Freemasonry. Does chaos lead to harmony in our craft? That's the question posed. And again, this issue, it's phenomenally laid out. Absolutely loved it. So here we go. This is the selected reading, page number 8, Dissonance, A Late Night Revelation, by Greg Kaminsky. Dissonance is defined as a tension or clash resulting from the combination of two disharmonious, or unsuitable elements. When I think of dissonance within the institution of Freemasonry, the example that immediately comes to mind is the same one that did when I initially joined the fraternity more than a decade ago. The clash between older brethren that essentially ran and administered the fraternity and believed their institution was a bastion of fraternal camaraderie and outlet for philanthropic and charitable endeavors, and the younger brethren who joined Freemasonry to learn about the esoteric symbolism, the journey from darkness to light, and a tangible, though incomplete, connection with ancient mysteries. This dissonance continues to an extent, but it is impossible to not perceive a shift. I think my own experience is not atypical. When I joined in 2009, I was cautioned by my close friends, who were already members of the lodge, to not disclose any interest or pursuit of esoteric arts. Though I had been studying Western esotericism, including subjects like alchemy, tarot, ceremonial magic, meditation, and mysticism for several years, I never mentioned that these were areas that occupied a good deal of my time and interest outside of work. Even after going through the Blue Lodge degrees, I kept my studies and practices close to the vest, never revealing them to anyone outside of a group that knew and were comfortable with these pursuits. Over the years, this has thankfully ceased to be a problem. Why? What happened to change my behavior? The answer to these questions is less straightforward than I expected as I began to understand it. I recall that late one night in the Grand Secretary's office, I noticed an unusual book on a side table. As I looked closer, I saw the title of a familiar volume, but in an unfamiliar form. It was a copy of Paul Foster Case's The True and Invisible Rosicrucian Order that had been typed and bound from the 1920s, I believe. I was taken aback. Never did I expect to find a text like this in the office of a Grand Lodge officer, especially after all the cautious warnings I'd received about how these interests weren't really tolerated. Directly in front of my eyes was evidence that not only was it tolerated, it was studied extensively. This incident allowed me to begin to understand that it wasn't really the case that esoteric interests and pursuits weren't tolerated, but instead to learn that it was fine in what was regarded as the proper context, meaning that if one pursued the study of esotericism, it was expected to be done within the context of the higher degrees and dependent bodies, such as the Scottish Rite and the SRICF, but not in Blue Lodge. There is a certain logic to this expectation. However, we live in times where one can read about any esoteric topic by simply searching online. And because of this, often young men coming into the fraternity are already familiar with basic esoteric concepts and teachings before they even arrive at the antechamber, as I was. Perhaps, in times past, before the internet, this sort of division between esoteric and non-esoteric was sensible and practical. If one had never encountered these ideas, it would make sense to learn about them in the time and way laid out by the creators of Freemasonry's higher degrees and appendant bodies. I accept that. But now that our world has changed, we may experience the dissonance between already having been exposed to esotericism and wanting to see how Freemasonry is a part of it, and brethren who don't accept that entered apprentices should be thinking about or discussing how Freemasonry shares concepts and symbolism with alchemy, for example. As I grasped what was happening, it occurred to me that it wasn't that I needed to hide my interests, but that I should not cast pearls before swine, that I should only discuss these subjects in situations where they would be honored. Now, I must praise all those brethren over the past few years who have made it a mission to bring more awareness of the esoteric aspects of Freemasonry to the forefront. Their work has made it much more acceptable for these pursuits to be harmonious with one's Masonic journey. From books to conferences to podcasts to educational endeavors, Masons all over the world do honor the esoteric aspects of the craft and have over time made the dissonance far less noticeable. For that, I am extremely thankful. I no longer feel any need to obscure my interests and pursuits from any brother. To me, this is the sort of harmony between Freemasonry and esotericism that I'd expected before I joined. And now, within a relatively short period of time, esoteric interests are honored in a far greater capacity within Freemasonry than I ever expected. Additionally, in my opinion, it is important to fulfill the needs of Freemasons who are interested and not stifle the study of esotericism and Freemasonry. By honoring those aspects, we pay homage to the roots of our fraternity in the distant past. Finally, I want to mention a point that I've been speaking about for the past year or so, which is that there is a dissonance for me personally in labeling Freemasonry as esoteric at all. As I've been following another path over the past few years, it has become abundantly clear to me that while Freemasonry has symbolism and teachings that point to or discuss esoteric topics, these are not methods, but information. The difference between this and esotericism, as I understand it, is that information does not equal transformation. It is only by engaging actual methods or practices that are designed to bring about significant changes in human beings that one can actually change. And these methods have been proven effective by both men and women across centuries and continents. Freemasonry is an excellent foundation and first step in this process, but it does not provide specific methods and practices whereby the initiate can transform. Some Masons successfully find ways to accomplish this. For a wonderful example, please read the work of Chuck Dunning Jr. But many don't, and even more aren't really interested in going beyond their already extensive Masonic activities. But what are referred to as esoteric practice schools do provide these sorts of methods. These schools are found primarily in esoteric Christianity, Jewish Kabbalism, Sufism, and Buddhist and Hindu Tantra. I believe that understanding the difference between what these schools teach and practice and what Freemasonry teaches is most useful in distinguishing how one may enact processes to actualize the teachings of Freemasonry. If one is able to take their understanding of Freemasonry and apply it while working in a practical manner to transform themselves, then an entirely new and wondrous level of harmony can be ascertained. Greg Kaminsky. And again, you can find Greg Kaminsky at his podcast, The Occult of Personality Podcast. We've had him on in the past. You can also find him at The Freedom Place. Follow him on Facebook, I'm sure, his public posts, or follow The Freedom Place podcast or The Occult of Personality Podcast on social media. I know that would be most appreciated. And please head on over to a little website called TheResearchLodge.com. And you could follow them on Instagram and like them on Facebook. Who is it? It's the Southern California Research Lodge, the Fraternal Review. Their editor-in-chief is Douglas Russell, managing editor Dago Rodriguez, who's a past master, and he's the current master of the Southern California Lodge of Research. Copy editors Brett Fisher and Jeriel Smith. Their events and calendar editor is Jeriel Smith. Pop culture editor Michael Laidlaw. And the layouts, of course, Dago Rodriguez. And some artwork within the magazine comes from Bob Gorman, copyright 1994. I highly recommend this magazine. And in fact, let me let you know that my lodge has a lodge membership to this magazine. And we get 4 copies and a digital copy every issue. So, with that, I think this has been a great episode. I don't want to have too much commentary on Greg's piece because I've talked about it in the past, specifically on the last episode where I talked about when the meme hits home. this is certainly where these concepts are starting to come out. Freemasonry being the esoteric school, or perhaps a place to begin. Or, if you have found the right way to do things, it can be an excellent school, if you have the right lodge. If you're into esotericism, and the lodge you're a member of is also of an esoteric nature. I want to thank all of the producers, contributors, and fellows this week. As we do each week, please consider, again, becoming a producer of the program. Don't forget to check out the Midnight Freemasons at midnightfreemasons.org. 3 articles every single week. You're going to love it. Check out that new podcast by Greg Knott, Meet, Act, and Part. And don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable. So, it's about that time. I hope you all have a wonderful week coming up. And until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.